This week on Flyover Country with Scott Jennings.
These people are learning a terrible lesson, which is if you're a young idiot, you can yell at Joe Biden enough and he will do whatever you want them to do. I mean, he'll just do it.
Attention passengers, we ask that you please fasten your seatbelts at this time and secure all baggage underneath your seat or in the overhead compartments. Flyover Country with Scott Jennings is prepared for takeoff.
It's a rare opportunity to see the podcast studio in person here. Hello, Courtney Yap Norris.
Hello, gentlemen.
Welcome back from your travels.
We're all here.
Jennings, welcome back.
I'm glad to be here.
I've been holding down the fort here in Kentucky.
Yes, you have.
I've been here.
I was in California for a little while, and I was on the Golden Gate Bridge the other day, a mere day before it was shut down.
We'll talk about that.
I know we're going to get to that. Wow. I was fortunate that I was traveling the day before. Otherwise, I would have still be on it probably, or walking
stuck
across
there forever.
It. Tell you what.
You get stuck anywhere?
I didn't, no. Smooth travels.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we have we're recording this, by the way, on today's Wednesday.
Yep.
April 17th, 2 days shy of my son Henry's 18th birthday. Can't wait for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the morning, but hopefully this will be posted just as soon as possible. So because things are changing,
yeah,
things are moving here. And coming up in a few minutes here, we'll talk a little bit about the Trump trials
underway, jury selection.
Exactly.
Does it seem to be zipping through that? I don't know. Have you guys been listening to the some of the answers? Some of the jurors have been giving.
It's pretty good. I saw the list of
questions that were pretty impressive.
Some people know very little. Some people know a lot. It's sort of fascinating.
I do want to get to the breaking news. It involves a Kentucky legislator, Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massey, who apparently during the House Republican Conference in Washington, D.C., in the Capitol on Tuesday, stood and announced to the conference that he would not be supporting Mike Johnson for Speaker if, in fact, the Speaker continues with the efforts to pursue some funding, I guess, for Ukraine. Is that the hang-up?
I think that, plus I think Massey has been out of shape over the FISA vote that was taken the other day, you know, the reauthorization of that.
This has to do with warrantless searches, but for national security in certain cases. And there's a FISA court that gives some – there's a process you have to go through to be able to get these, but –
yeah.
All depends on, and this, of course, this is an interesting juxtaposition, Scott and Courtney, of, you know, people talk about the division of the Republican Party with the advent of Donald Trump. The Republican Party has had division and has had different stripes here for quite a while, and this is just sort of the reemergence, I guess, of not the Tea Party, I guess the, what is it, what is it called? The Freedom Caucus.
Yeah, and I do think it has its roots back with the Tea Party. I mean, the conference has been divided, and several speakers have now dealt with this, and sometimes it's over policy. I think it is possibly in this case. Sometimes it's just over tactical preferences or strategic preferences. But in this case, you do see a real split in the party over things like foreign aid. You see a split in the party over this FISA court issue, and these are deep divisions. But anyway, as you said, Thomas Massey of Kentucky's 4th Congressional District finds himself in the middle of the action.
There's only one person right now who can stop us from going into what happened last fall, and that's Mike Johnson. He's cleaning the barn, that's obvious.
So you want him to resign? You want him to resign?
Yes. Yeah, I asked him to resign.
What did he say?
He said he would not. And then I said, well, you're the one who's going to put us into this. Because the motion is going to get called, okay? Does anybody doubt that? The motion will get called, and then he's going to lose more votes than Kevin McCarthy. And I have told him this in private, like weeks ago.
So, again, he's talking about the motion being called, I mean, the motion to vacate.
Yeah.
Marjorie Taylor Greene has been the chief proponent of this. It's a question of who's going to join her.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Massey says it'll be him. And one of the factors to kind of keep in mind with all this, because of how tight the House is it a five-seat margin? That's going to change, though, because Friday is when Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin, his resignation takes effect. So suddenly all you need is like two.
Yeah.
You know, in this case. So we're to the point now where I'm guessing if they file that motion, I guess they can. If I were them, and you want to be able to be successful, just wait until after Friday.
Yeah, they can. I guess she's already filed it technically, but I guess they can then call it up whenever they want, and it's privileged. So I guess they have to deal with it at the moment. I mean, Massey made a bold prediction: more votes would be lost by Mike Johnson than Kevin McCarthy, which...
Do you think that was a threat, or do you think he really knows that? Do you think he knows what,
I mean,
how they're going to go?
I don't know. I mean, look, there's a group of people who, obviously, Massey runs with, and, I mean, it doesn't seem like an... It didn't sound like an idle threat, but or just kind of pulling it out of your rear end,
no,
but...
But you have... Jim Jordan saying no, that's not a good idea.
Right.
I mean, that's a Freedom Caucus leader, right?
But the thing is, you don't need all those people, as you pointed out. The math is such you just need a few of them, and then the question becomes, does the Democratic Party, do Democrats start to vote with Johnson to keep him in power, to keep the institution from going through another, you know, few weeks of a rudderless period? That's why Massey, if you listen to him yesterday, why he said he asked Johnson to resign is so that they could expedite the picking of a new speaker while this was going on. Mm-hmm. So, which Johnson said he would not do. I don't know what's going to happen. It's kind of a fascinating thing right now.
It's a circus up there, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really practically speaking, and this is just the wider picture of it, is the idea then for Mike Johnson to be able to stay and keep the speakership, he's going to rely upon Democratic votes?
That's the question. Will they vote with him, or will some vote present and lower the threshold of votes that he needs? Right. You know, what will they do? And is it important enough to them to keep stability in the institution? And will they then try to extract concessions from him to do it?
That is the entire the gambit here, is that, you know, really then – and I don't know enough about this to know if what I'm saying is mm-hmm. if I even believe it, but is by the folks who are the most upset with Johnson, by them forcing his hand and saying you have to do this, will the actual effect be ending up with a bill or with a package that actually is more friendly to Democrats because you need their votes to be able to pass anything?
Yeah, I think. What's interesting is I think the Republicans are doing these tactics. I think the Democrats, if I were them, I'd be like, yeah, let's make this House chaos before the election, because I think the American people already think that the House is chaos and the Republicans have created that chaos. So for them, I'd be like, yeah, let's keep this chaos going, because it's only going to behoove us and help us at the end of the day win more seats.
I was looking at this, Scott, going into the podcast this morning. And, you know, year after year, the number of competitive House districts is decreasing. In 2022, 36 races were decided within a 5% margin. That's about 8% of House seats. You're talking about 40 seats. So reason I bring this up is that we're in a perpetual cycle now of having this kind of deadlock. And so are we going to enter into this a new period of history where there's this more coalitions, more gridlock, more dysfunction? I don't know.
I mean, it just depends on how big your majority is. I mean, and so if one party can get control of it, then no, you don't have to have gridlock necessarily. And but if it's very close, if it's five seats one way or the other, then by definition, it strengthens the hand of every single member of the chamber. It's a majoritarian institution. So if you have such a closely divided House, then everybody becomes that much more important. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in the election. I think it's going to be an incredibly close race for the House. It was close last time, and the Republicans won the national popular vote, but they only won by a handful of seats. So we'll see. It's sort of fascinating. It's different in the Senate, where, you know, there's not really any Republicans on defense. You know the score here. One Democrat loses, and the thing will flip. But in the House, I think it's very much up in the air.
So the question, I guess, I have, ready for this one?
I can't wait.
What's it mean to be a Republican? Isn't this the whole definition debate going on right now? Is that because you're saying this in the presidential race, certainly, but that's been decided a long time ago as far as who the nominee is.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump has rebranded that. So what does it mean in the Congress? What does it mean to be a Republican? We've seen Leader McConnell certainly stick to the traditional Republican philosophies and core beliefs that have been there since Reagan. But this is all just in turmoil right now in terms of where this leads. I guess this is the process where they figure it out.
Yeah, this is how parties change, or parties are not monoliths. I mean, you always have people in parties who have views that are outside of the orthodoxy of their party. It's gotten, I think, less likely lately. You know, in the last 20 years, we've had more sorting. But for the Republican Party, there's always been a strain of isolationism, and there's always been a strain of internationalism. You've also always had this strain of libertarianism where Massey springs from versus sort of mainstream conservatism. So, yeah, I mean, this is where these policy debates work themselves out. And it's easier to sort these things out when you have the White House, because then the president kind of sets the tone. When you don't have the White House, then it's a little bit more of a free-for-all in terms of the internal debates in the party. So that's what's happening to the Republicans right now. It is noteworthy to me that Massey did not support Donald Trump in the presidential primary. And some of the people, I think, but Marjorie Taylor Greene does support him. It's interesting, sort of.
Interesting bedfellows.
Yeah, kind of, personalities, yeah. Of how it's sorting itself out. But most of the time when you have the White House, these kinds of things get settled at the top level. Right. And you can maintain more party discipline that way.
Is that, well, you were saying before, the FISA warrants, but certainly the funding for Ukraine.
Yeah.
Any sense of where we're going to end up?
I don't know. I mean, I was reading in the political rags this morning that Johnson's, you know, he announced this plan, but we still don't have the text as we record this at 8:17 a.m. So it makes you wonder whether he's second guessing it or what he's hearing on the, you know, from his people about it. And of course, he announced this plan. Then the Massey thing happened. And now here we are a couple of days after having announced the plan with nothing.
Well, so he might have to change the plan now if he knows he has to have Democrat votes to get it passed.
Yeah, I mean, it seems up in the air. I agree with you.
So let me ask you one more question here, both of you, of this from a campaign perspective. To what extent does the, and I'll call it dysfunction, I think the American people largely see it that way, especially if the motion to vacate is successful. And as you know, then no House business can be conducted until a speaker is named, correct? So as a result, if in fact everything just is frozen, does that have an electoral consequence or not?
I don't know. I mean, I think we sometimes overread this. And I think people vote for the person that they want. They vote for the party that they want. I don't think a lot of people walk into the voting booth and say, you know, I really love my congressman. But, you know, some other people in another district did something I don't like, so I'm going to punish it. I don't think people make those bank shots. So I think it's easy to overread. And plus, it's a presidential election year. I think most of what happens is going to be dictated by, truthfully, what happens at the top of the ticket.
Yeah, that kind of puts a blanket over whatever the House is doing. I did comment that I do think Americans think that the House is dysfunctional, but to what point they are, to your point, Scott, they're actually paying attention to it and not other.
Yeah, we also, I think, often overestimate how much people are following
attention.
The day-to-day TikTok of this. Obviously, this is a political podcast, but yeah. but you know, I mean, are people really? I mean, how many people heard Thomas Massey and what he did yesterday? How many people could pick Thomas Massey out of
like
a lineup?
Three more right now.
So I think that's, you know, true. It's also April. The election's in November.
Right.
You know, call me in October and I'll let you know what I think.
And I
do feel like more people are probably crying over the amount of money that they had to just write on their taxes on Monday, so they're probably not paying attention to it.
And I'm guilty of continuing to look through a political prism, which is probably about 25 or 50 years old sometimes on some of these things, because Scott's like, yeah, you're a dinosaur. But historically, I would think that this would affect the top of the ticket. If your party is completely dysfunctional and is shutting things down in Washington, D.C., I mean, does
what what is shut down?
Well, it will be. I mean, if in fact the vacate resolution or motion is coming through, I'm not wringing my hands over it necessarily. I'm just curious. I mean, but you're now. So, what will affect Donald Trump's chances more? The what's going on in Washington, D.C. and how they end up voting on that, or what happens in the New York courtroom?
Oh, courtroom. I mean, I think most voters, well, first of all, we have very low bar for politicians right now. Mm-hmm. We have low bar for Congress. Nobody approves of it. So when you're like, oh, this dysfunction is terrible, I think most people think, oh, yeah, what, Congress can't get along? Well, breaking news, you know, and so to the extent that they're parsing out. But the courtroom stuff, which is happening now, is, I think, potentially more impactful on the election. Donald Trump is in New York City, where his criminal trial for failing to file the correct sex paperwork is underway.
So thank you very much. We had some amazing things happen today. As you know, my son is graduating from high school, and it looks like the judge will not let me go through the graduation of my son, who's
students go well, and was looking forward for years to have graduation with his mother and father there. It looks like the judges are going to allow me to escape this scam. It's a scam trial. If you read all of the legal pundits, all of the legal scholars today, there's not one that I see that said this is a case that should be brought or tried. It's a scam. It's a political witch hunt. It continues, and it continues forever. And we're not going to be given a fair trial. It's a very, very sad thing.
So Trump, by the way, he's not wrong about this. You guys remember when this was indicted? This is the case in New York. This is the Stormy Daniels hush money case. And when it was indicted, virtually every lawyer that goes on television and talks about this stuff, Democrat and Republican, said it's a dog. This case should not be. It's novel. The Justice Department looked at it, took a pass. The FEC looked at it, took a pass. And now you have this politically motivated prosecutor in New York City, hyper-liberal prosecutor, who's testing out a novel legal theory. This, you know, paperwork crap like this is normally a misdemeanor. He has contorted it into a felony.
And of course, and the heart of it is that Donald Trump reached a legal NDA with Stormy Daniels.
Yeah.
Is her stage name, I guess. Stephanie something is her real name.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Courtney. No, she's our culture maven.
That's true.
She celebrates her entire catalog.
She's burying her head in her hands right now.
Anyway, that's a stage name.
that is true. Well, you never know. Anyway, but I guess Alvin Bragg's the way I see this is he's saying is that Donald Trump should have used campaign funds to pay her off and not to say anything because he used his own money and hid it, that as a result that was a campaign donation, if you will. In other words, he was doing a political action without filing the right paperwork for it.
That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. I mean, this is a ridiculous case.
Which is crazy because Donald Trump has done plenty of other stuff which is legitimately questionable legally, and I think in Georgia, for instance, is the strongest case in my opinion, as far as election interference. But what then is happening here to Donald Trump's benefit? I think ultimately this case, even though there are plenty of people, and I'm probably one of them, that would look at a candidate differently if this candidate is convicted of a felony. At the same time, the longer this goes on and the more of a show and sham it is, it makes him a much more sympathetic figure.
Yeah, I don't know if you're getting any sympathy for what he is alleged to have done.
No question, but he can frame it the way he wants.
Sure, but I think in the pantheon of things people have to worry about regarding his candidacy, this is
pretty low.
It's pretty low, but I go back to what he has been arguing, which the core of it is correct. Most legal people that are out there as experts commenting on this have said all along that this is a dog, that this case should not have been indicted, this is not a felony, and it's a weak case. I mean, bottom line, it's a weak case brought by a partisan prosecutor. Now, if you hate Donald Trump, you love it, you think this, you know, he's getting his comeuppance, and if you love Donald Trump, you hate it, and you think this is part of the witch hunt. But the reality is, doing this first, I think they indicted it first, now they're bringing it. This has destabilized the entire legal argument against Donald Trump, and it makes everything else seem so trivial.
This, to me, is to your point about comeuppance. This is with O.J. Simpson dying. It reminds me of the fact that he didn't serve any jail time because he was acquitted of the murder of his wife and Ron Goldman. But of course, he served like 9 years in prison for stealing his own stuff back. it was just crazy. But everyone knew that was not about that case.
Yeah.
It was about let's get him on something.
Because
he's guilty and he's terrible and we have to hold him accountable.
Yeah.
So this is what's happening with Trump. This is not really, people don't care about this.
I think that they've muddied up all of his indictments and charges by having too many, and then people get apathetic to the situation. And if you hate Trump, you're in that boat. And I think most Americans are like, I'm over this. Like, I think they just see it as like,
there's multiple layers of this and it's hard to keep up with every day. I mean, you get this case and then you get Supreme Court looking at stuff on the federal piece. It is hard to keep up with. Stephen A. Smith, by the way, is a sports commentator. I know him as an NBA commentator. I guess he's now branching out into political stuff, but I thought he had an interesting take on all of this. Stevenson.
And his message was for basically his liberal listeners and the very people you're talking about who think that maybe Trump is getting his comeuppance here.
Friends out there, all you're doing is showing that you're scared you can't beat them on the issues and the merits. That's why he keeps saying it's a political campaign against me. That's why he keeps saying they can't beat me at the election, at the polls. This is the only way they could do it. And if you don't put him in jail, and he still goes from being the presumptive GOP nominee to the official GOP nominee, and he goes to the polls, even though he was going to whine about winning and being rigged again, you have given more fodder to that argument. Which means we'll never have peace in this country, because tens of
pretty powerful, but I think plain spoken statement from Stephen A. Smith, and I think he's absolutely right.
Well, this is exactly, Courtney, where we are right now, as far as I think most of the political the chattering class, which is that Donald Trump. What I hear is Donald Trump is a threat to democracy, so you can use any means necessary, including undemocratic means, whatever it takes.
Yes.
To bring him down.
Yeah. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I think he's completely right that this is what Americans think, what all people think, his supporters think. And I think the prosecution up in New York are in some sort of bubble echo chamber where they probably have a lot of friends that are telling them this is a great idea and they're feeling really good about themselves. And at the end of the day, he's going to win in spite of this, I think. I think this is going to help him at the end of the day.
So they've picked like half the jury. Oh, I can't. Some days I wake up and think, oh, it's New York. They're never going to let him walk on this. But then I think, well, you know, it just takes one.
All it takes is one.
It just takes one. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people who hate Donald Trump are only thinking about, oh, when he gets convicted, it's going to be so sweet. I wonder if they're thinking about the possibility that they acquit Donald Trump.
Well,
and how much of a deflated balloon they're going to sound like on MSNBC that night. I mean,
then again, okay, we're talking about political strategy here, and this is political, this is not legal, this is political. Who does that fire up more? I'm asking you like to look like three steps down the road. Who would be more upset about or more fired up about showing up to vote as a result of Donald Trump being acquitted?
I think Trump is going, if he were to get acquitted in any of this, it just, to me, the gust of wind in his sails from beating them
At their own game.
It will be a huge – and look, for a lot of people who don't follow this all that closely and they're not following the day-to-day and they're not intimate with the details, they're going to pick up the paper one day and maybe it says Donald Trump acquitted. They're going to say, oh, I guess he was right. I guess it was a witch hunt. I mean, honestly,
right.
He's going to be vindicated. And so
– if it's on any of the – that's what
any
I mean.
Of it.
They muddled it up. If he gets acquitted on any of these charges, that's going to be the front page headline, and then he's going to hold it up, and he's going to show it, and all of his supporters are going to be happy.
I told you it was a witch hunt. I told you none of this was true.
Right.
I told you I was innocent. I had to go through it. They tried to martyr me, but I've risen up. You know, it's going to be an amazing victory lap for him.
And this is frankly, I mean, so in that regard, I mean, rather than being on the campaign trail right now, he's stuck in this courtroom. He has to be there.
For weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
However, every day that he's speaking to the cameras, he's able to frame this in a political way.
Yeah.
So in a way, this is a political rally. It's just being done, and he's able to frame it that way. Obviously, nobody else is inside. The court. There's no cameras other than still cameras in the courtroom.
And what he says about that is absolutely true. You know, I should be in North Carolina. I should be in Florida. I should be in, you know, Georgia. I should be out campaigning in the swing states. But instead, my political enemies have me chained to a desk here in New York City. And so, you know, it's easy sometimes to dismiss him as, you know, just kind of hyperbole or exaggerated. But listen to what he's saying. Everything he's saying about this is true. It's a terrible case brought by a partisan prosecutor in the middle of a campaign, and the net result of it is they won't let me out of here so I can go campaign. I mean, is a presidential campaign really the time for a local prosecutor to be testing out a novel legal theory that two other agencies that are actually equipped to look at this have already passed on? I would submit that Trump has a point here.
And the longer this goes, And the longer it takes to get all this stuff, yeah, I guess it's off the campaign trail, but also doesn't it reduce the chances that any other of the court cases and the charges against him will be adjudicated before the election?
No, I don't think there's any bearing. I mean, I think what we're waiting on now is the Supreme Court. They have to decide whether he has presidential immunity. And I guess they also have to decide on this issue of blocking an official proceeding. That's also being looked at by the Supreme Court.
And on Tuesday, in the arguments from the conservative justices, at least, in their questioning, it indicated a reluctance or some skepticism about using that, interrupting a judicial or official proceeding as a way to prosecute people who were at the Capitol on January 6th.
Now, the prosecutor, Jack Smith, has said this won't have any bearing on the Trump case. The real issue is when they rule on his claims of presidential immunity. Once that happens, and presuming they don't give him immunity and throw this all out, then you could feasibly get a trial on that. But this one, I think, will be over before that happens.
I guess just in terms of all the motions and what it all takes to be able to get a trial actually going, you know, you're looking at least, I would think, through the end of May for this one to be done.
I think I heard 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah,
a total. So you know, that's a lot.
And the fact that he has to be there in person. In other words, he can't be in two places at one time.
No, he's stuck.
He can't go to another courtroom in Georgia or anywhere else.
But you know, his supporters are like, he's doing it for us.
You know, somebody told me a while back. They said, in this election, he who campaigns least will probably win. So maybe.
Yeah,
I mean, this is good for Trump and Biden can go out
there.
I was about to say, it
actually might be kind of good. He can run a basement campaign. He has the cameras there every day. He can say what he wants, and he can go home. Like, maybe it's good for him.
I guess he can
helping him out.
He can go do stuff on the weekends, right? I mean, he can have rallies.
And today's Wednesday. I think they're aren't they off on Wednesday?
I think that's right. So he's not totally chained up in there, but you know, it's still a significant time.
He's missing his son's graduation, don't you?
Well, I think that was a pending decision, but I think he was setting it up that way. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
He does know what he's doing. I'm not a big fan, but I think he's right. I think he's 100% right.
When we come back, we'll talk about the campaign trail overall, as well as the latest. What businesses are being shut down these days in the Hamas defense? When we come back on Flyover Country with Scott Jennings.
Hey there, Flyover Country listeners. Today's episode is brought to you by the Bluegrass Media Lab, Kentucky's premier media studio. The Bluegrass Media Lab offers a wide array of services, including video production, podcasting, live shot broadcasting, web development, media training, and more. You name it, they do it. Head over to bluegrassmedialab.com today to get in touch. Now, back to more Flyover Country with Scott Jennings.
And welcome back to Flyover Country with Scott Jennings. I'm Joe Arnold. Courtney Yap Norris is here. Scott is here. And if you're enjoying your morning coffee,
good for you.
just you might want to avoid some places. Starbucks, you can't hide?
Yeah.
Not until we leave Palestine. Okay, yeah.
It doesn't even rhyme.
It does not rhyme. That's problem number one. Number two, why would Starbucks be trying to hide? They're literally a place of business. They're not trying to hide.
They literally advertise to where they're going to be. They have an entire app that you can download and see every location and how long it'll take you to get there.
It's been an amazing week for the Hamas, the pro-Hamas demonstrators. They've been invading the Starbucks and they've been laying down on roads in different cities. They blocked both lanes coming and going of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. It's been crazy. But my new favorite senator, other than Mitch McConnell, my new favorite senator continues to be John Fetterman. Courtney, what's his latest comment about these people?
I love this. His tweet yesterday was, "I don't know who needs to hear this, but blocking a bridge or berating folks in Starbucks isn't righteous. It just makes you an asshole. Demand Hamas to send every hostage back home and surrender."
I love it. John Fetterman.
I did not have John Fetterman being one of my favorite senators on my 2024 bingo card.
As you all know, I was very hard on him last year during the campaign.
His hoodies. And now I'm like, wear your hoodie. I don't care.
He just
this is amazing.
This guy's turned into like the most amazing, plain-spoken truth teller in all of Washington, D.C. So good for you, John Fetterman. Have you all, by the way, been in, have any of you been caught up in any of these places? I've been in New York when a couple of these people will get in the road and try to, you know, they'll get in front of the tunnel or whatever. It's pretty maddening, actually. I mean, it's already hard enough to get around. I just wonder every time I see them, who do you believe? Are you, do you believe you're winning hearts and minds? What do you think you're doing? I saw a video yesterday of a dude. I think it, I don't know, it was New York or Boston. Anyway, he's just dragging, literally got out of his car, was just dragging these people over to the sidewalk. Tom Cotton got in trouble, by the way.
I saw that.
He tweeted that you should just take matters into your own hands if you see these people, which got him a lot of condemnation about it.
I'm going to
confront the offenders.
The deans and the professors from UC Berkeley.
Yeah.
And you had basically, they were hosting a garden party.
Yeah.
In their backyard.
It's lovely.
Private place. But they invited the law students to come. And apparently one of them decided to bring along a microphone, a speaker.
Oh my God.
And then in this confrontation, you know, alleged this is her First Amendment right to do this.
Not only from material sustenance, not only this material sustenance. We have attorneys. We have attorneys.
Okay, you don't have to get aggressive.
I'm not touching me.
Please leave our house. You are guests at our house.
This is our First Amendment right.
No, this is my house.
This is my house. This is the dean of the Berkeley Law School saying your First Amendment rights do not extend to my backyard.
Yeah, she wanted to basically make a speech. And, right. You know, these college kids have just been marinating in this environment of constant protest. Mm-hmm. And the belief that if you're protesting something, you are by definition correct.
Yes.
And that no rules apply to you. So I can block the traffic. I can go to this guy's backyard. But the act of protesting somehow sets you above all laws and rules, I guess.
I just wish when I was in college that I wasn't working two jobs and going to school and doing an internship so that I could have all the time in the world to protest things that made me feel angry. Like, that would be – don't you wish that when you were in school that you had all that time, that you could just feel privileged enough to be protesting
it makes
things?
Me wonder when they study. Like, what – they get together and they plan the protest.
Colleges are too easy maybe now. Maybe we need to make it harder so that they're, you know
– crazy.
I was trying to look this up. I think it was the Wall Street Journal did the article on the New York Times, and it was the editor there, they're having a whole sort of just regroup there, in part due to the fact that young staffers are not used to the idea of being challenged. You know, that this is a situation. In other words, open debate and a vigorous debate within a newsroom, within an editorial board, whatever it is healthy. It's a good thing for you to be able to stand up and articulate your beliefs, but you don't necessarily, at the end of the day, get your way. And that's what we're not used to here. What they're not used to is the idea of, yes, even though you've, in your own mind, articulated your argument effectively, it doesn't mean that everyone's just going to cave and
well,
acquiesce
should they.
To what
I
you
mean,
said.
I think that's the. I mean, what's your point of having a conversation? Is it to learn more?
No.
Or is it to try to convince the other person that you are right and they are wrong and everyone should bow down to you? Those are two different things. Arguments are fluid. Opinions are fluid. They should be. And I think today people don't understand how to have conversations. About
but I think what they've learned at college is that there are no conversations. It's just if you are a social justice warrior, if you're an aggrieved or oppressed. You know, they view the whole world as oppressed and oppressors. So if you're one of the oppressed, then when you're in college, then you win. Like, you win. It doesn't matter what you say.
That's right.
It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. It doesn't matter if you're logical. It doesn't matter where or what you're doing. You automatically win. And then they get out into the real world, Joe Arnold and Courtney, and they find out that you don't always win. This happened to my favorite idiot of the week, by the way. So Bakersfield, California, a woman... By the way, when I first saw the video of her, I thought she was like one of these college kids. She's 28 years old.
Oh, wow.
Riddhi Patel. Here's the news from the local paper. Became the subject of intense internet commentary as she went to the Bakersfield City Council to argue for them to pass a resolution for a ceasefire. Because, as you know, both Israel and Hamas are waiting for their instructions from the Bakersfield
City Council.
But at the end of her rant demanding this ceasefire,
so regardless of whether you elect people into office, office. They'll backstab you. They'll let you die. And for that reason, you guys want to criminalize us with metal detectors. We'll see you at your house. We'll murder you.
So 28
she
years
said
old.
It so sweetly, though.
28 we'll years old. You. So what she was really, what she was so mad about is they had come to, and I guess because of the protesters, they had to put some security measures in place. Probably smart since they support weird things. And so she was mad about that and then literally threatened to kill them. So then she was arrested on several counts of threatening and felonies. Felonies. And then she went to court, Joe, and I don't know if you've seen the video. I would encourage you to look it up.
Can't wait.
But it's absolutely glorious. It is literally just her standing there sobbing in a courtroom.
Did she say anything in defense
no,
of herself?
She was crying.
A deputy public defender entered not guilty pleas on Patel's behalf to 8 counts of threatening a public official and 10 counts of making terroristic threats.
Mm. And so there's this amazing, but she's like, while the judge is talking to her, she's right. just basically sobbing. But this is what happens when you come out of your fantasy world.
That's right. That's what it is.
And now, wait a minute. You mean to tell me there are consequences to my actions?
So she's probably never faced any consequences to any actions.
Good on you, Bakersfield. Good on you, John Fetterman.
Yes.
I think the more people in positions of responsibility who hold these idiots to account, the better off we'll be, because it will modify behavior.
I would say every group, every party, every organization, there's always going to be fringe elements to it. And the question is to what extent do you allow the fringe elements to take over the functioning part of it, and to what extent do you marginalize them to where they belong?
Is this fringe now, though?
Well,
that's my problem. This is basically the beating heart of the Democratic Party now.
That's my point, though, is to what extent do you allow that to become the prevailing and I think basically it's a function of bullying. I think it's a situation where people just, they're used to getting their way, and they can just do it. So at some point, someone needs to stand up and say, no, we're not going to let this go on anymore.
Well, you have Biden in the White House shuffling around, not standing up to any of this. So what makes it think that their party, when their head of their party is...
Oh, they get results. They had those people in Dearborn, Michigan the other day.
Death to America.
And all of a sudden, all of a sudden Biden's out, we probably do need an immediate ceasefire. I mean, these people are learning a terrible lesson, which is if you're a young idiot, you can yell at Joe Biden enough and he will do whatever you want them to do. I mean, he'll just do it.
Okay. I appreciate the fact that you are joining me on the lawn shaking your fist because I've been there for a long time. Because the whole question is, there's one thing about pluralism and something else about literally being anti-American and trying to undermine your own country.
Yes.
And the idea that you have organizers teaching people how to say death to America in Arabic at different organizations. Oh, this is where we are right now. No, I believe if you say death to America,
you should be in jail.
Yeah. I mean, this is a situation where, I mean, if nothing else, then reconsider where you live.
You would criminalize that?
Yeah.
You would?
I don't know. Is it like burning the American flag where, like, you just let people do it? But, like, to some degree, at what point is it calling fire in a theater? If you have a big mass of people and they're all yelling death to America.
It's a good question.
Isn't it what Democrats are saying happened on January 6th? Like, all these people were just, like, yelling, and then all of a sudden they started acting upon those yells? I mean, isn't what they're arguing? So
What do you think? This is a good debate.
I think, overall, I'm a First Amendment hawk. I think you should be allowed to say it. But then again, to Scott's point before, there are consequences too for when and how you say it, and to what extent that is threatening people. What I'm saying is, depends on who you are, too. If you're not an American citizen and you say death to America in this country,
you're out.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of people in Dearborn who are not American citizens who are saying this.
But I think there are a lot who are.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, the question is, when do you become a subversive? When are you literally trying to overthrow the United States? Because I have no doubt some of these people would absolutely consider themselves to be
doing it right now. And to your point, Courtney, about the parallel with January 6th, I don't think everyone who was at the Capitol on January 6th is a subversive or an insurrectionist.
I agree. Yeah.
But for those who violently entered and knew what they were doing, they're not hostages. They are being tried for, on legitimate charges, in the same way as people who are subversives in the street who are saying death to America should be held accountable for if, in fact, they're causing
I just
dissension.
Feel like words matter, and I don't think these people are held responsible for the words that they say. I mean, you, Scott, are held responsible for the words that you say every single day, and I don't understand why you can go into a street, be shouting death to America, cause all this negative energy into our world, and then not be held accountable for that.
You know what I wonder about sometimes? These people, the people in the Starbucks, the people laying in the road, the people at the garden party, the lady at the Bakersfield City Council, the death to America. What is their life like on a daily basis?
Easy.
Do they get up and go to work?
TikTok.
I mean, what do they do? I mean, TikTok. What functionally, like if you got up one morning and said, well, gee whiz, I was going to do something today, but I think I'm just going to go lay down in front of the Holland Tunnel. I'm going to go
like
lay on
sick
the,
to work.
I'm like, going to, yes. Like, do you have a job? How do you function? What is the machinations of, I mean, what I come back to is my guess is most of these folks are of limited function in their own lives. And this has given them some kind of meaning. So they're participating in it, but as it relates to American civil society, they are absolutely subversive. They absolutely would love it if the United States crumbled and did not exist. I mean, that's the point of trying to disrupt society, right? Is because you want society as you know it to cease functioning. You don't want cars to go on over bridges. You don't want city councils to exist. You don't want the Starbucks to be able to hand out the call. Like it's effectively anarchy for the sake of government destruction. And that's the link. That's what they all desire, right?
Do you think it's a careful what you wish for thing, though? Do you think they really actually know what? I feel like we're comforted here in America where we have like these safe borders to an extent, and people start, they can say whatever they want. They don't really realize the reality of the things that they're saying. I don't think that they do. They don't have the bandwidth. They don't have the background. They really don't know how other people live in
the
world.
So you're saying what does success look like? In other words, if you succeed.
Oh, I've got your answer.
For them, yes.
Yeah. They're already achieving it. Success is when one of the two major political parties, the one that controls the White House, begins to coddle your viewpoints. That is success. The way you stamp this out in society is for both political parties to say, you're not welcome in our group.
Right.
You're not part of our.
Which is my point.
You're right. Off the political spectrum, which is wide in this country. You're not on.
Well,
it.
The problem is, go ahead.
But what they're seeing is they get results. And the only person in the Democratic Party who can apparently stand up and call the BS is John Fetterman. But the guy in the White House right now, they have him running scared. So success looks like, whoa, they appear to be listening. So what's the learned lived experience? Let's do more of it.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know what is so delicious? The only thing I love about all this is it's all just a big training exercise for the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Because if you think this is crazy, wait until these people get on the floor of the DNC. Wait until they shut down the arena. Wait until they're blocking the streets outside of the DNC. It's 68 all over again.
We're going to stay away from Chicago.
They may have to have a pandemic again just to shut it down.
You know what? A few of us were coughing and thinking that maybe we should just do this virtually.
Yeah.
This is all the natural extension, though, of an academia and intelligentsia in our country that has been telling a generation or two that we are fundamentally an unjust country, that we are founded by people who are unworthy, and as a result, I mean, the more you kind of remove those underpinnings of our constitutional republic, and you convince people that this is not legitimate, then this is what you get to is the fact that we're just one of many. We're not exceptional. We're just one of many nations, and we're just as open to that criticism as anybody else is, and to the point where it's revolution, basically.
Yeah.
You know. So this is where we are. So how does that all fit into the election?
Well, political update is that the polls have tightened. Joe Biden is now polled closer to Trump in the national polling. I'm not sure that's yet quite true in the swing states, but in the national polling, friend of the pod, Patrick Ruffini, has a new Echelon Insights survey, came out last night, showing Biden up 49-46. In a head-to-head with Trump. In the multi-candidate ballot, Biden was up 41-40 with RFK pulling in at 11 and West and Stein pulling in at 2 each. He also tested, you'll love this, he also tested some other interesting questions. Who would, neither of you have seen this. I want to hear your answers.
Okay.
Biden or Trump? This is an Echelon Insights poll. Who would perform better in a hot dog eating contest?
Well, Trump.
Trump.
At 45, he was plus 45 on that. Americans agree
Trump,
with that.
Yeah, he's
okay. That. Who would fare better fighting a medium-sized dog?
Well, Trump.
Trump.
Plus 31. He won that as well.
Physical.
This is easy.
Who would do better in a game of Monopoly?
Biden. Trump.
You think Biden?
Yeah, because Monopoly takes for freaking ever, and Trump doesn't have that kind of patience.
that's interesting.
I would just think that, given that Trump's entire real estate career, you know, is kind of brokered on being able to.
If you play Monopoly, buy the orange. That's how you win. It's a strategy. Buy the orange properties. Yeah, that's how you win.
Do you do the free parking? Do you do the $500 in the free parking or not?
We don't do the $500. We do, like, if you pay the taxes, it goes in the middle, and then if you land on free parking, you get it. That's what house rules.
My guess is you're a stickler for the rules.
No. We
do you
we
have
always
house rules. That's our house rules.
Yeah, yeah. You can make it. That's the whole thing. You can as long as all the players get together and they vote on what the rules are going in.
So Trump would just make these crazy house rules, maybe, and that's how he would win.
I live on Baltic. Yeah. I win.
Here at Mar-a-Lago.
All right. Who would be better contestant on the game Family Feud?
I don't think that Biden could think of anything that quickly.
That's what I think.
Yeah, I think Trump.
Trump won it plus 20 on this. All right, who would be better at managing a fantasy football team?
Oh.
Well, Biden would delegate it. I think that he would win.
Okay.
Biden? I'd say Biden. I don't know. I don't think
Trump won plus 17.
Okay, there you go.
Who has a better poker face?
Trump.
No, I think Biden.
Trump won it plus 15.
I love that Trump's winning all of these.
Who would be better at who would fare better at karaoke?
Trump. Yeah. Biden can't even speak.
By the way, as total aside, if you've not seen Joe Arnold do karaoke, it's a miracle.
Do you do karaoke?
It's great.
I love karaoke.
There was this one particular evening that I wanted to surprise a couple folks.
Okay, who would fare better at giving CPR? Not
Trump.
Receiving it, giving it.
Trump.
I would not put my life in either of their hands at that
Trump
point.
Barely, Trump. Plus 4.
Okay.
Who would fare better at changing a baby's dirty diaper?
Biden.
Depends on the baby, the Arkansas kid. He's not going to be changing that one.
I just move on. Who won?
Biden, plus 20.
Plus 20?
Yeah. Okay, who would perform better? This is great. I love Patrick's
These are
poll.
Great. These
who
are
would,
great.
Who would perform better in solving an escape room?
Trump.
Yeah, Trump, plus 14. Who would do a better job of creating a road trip playlist?
Trump.
I'll be Trump.
Barely, plus 4. Who would do better at building a piece of IKEA furniture?
Biden.
Trump won it, but barely, plus 3. Mm. Who would do a better job of teaching a beginner's cooking class?
Trump.
I can't imagine either of them for any of these. I'm sorry.
Biden. Biden won that one, plus 9. And who would do a better job of house-sitting for you over a long weekend?
Biden. He wouldn't do anything.
That's a good point.
Biden plus 13.
Yeah.
All right. So that's our friend at Echelon Insights, Patrick Ruffini, who had the big
poll.
But the larger issue is the national polls have tightened. Biden's actually ahead in a couple of them. The national polling averages have synced up, and it's really kind of 50-50 now.
Biden's on the campaign trail, and Trump is not.
Yeah. And so basically, look, I've been saying this for a while. I have no idea who is going to win. I really don't. I wake up some days and I think, you know, how could a guy with a 38% approval rating get reelected? Yeah. And then I wake up other days and think, how could a guy who spent all year in a courtroom get elected? I mean, it really is. I'm confounded. I don't have a strong instinct about how this is going to go.
I think it's going to come down to how the economy's doing. Well, like, I think that's going to be the number one.
See, that's conventional, and so now you're like on the lawn with me again, because that's the old way of looking at it.
I just think most people are going to, if they're happy at the polls, they're going to vote for who the incumbent is. If they're not happy, they're going to vote for the other
guy. I just don't see in this economy how it can recover that quickly for Biden to have a chance. But that's conventional thinking. There are other things that come into this, such as the existential threats that people think that democracy is on the line here.
Yeah, I mean, I have somebody said, like, they told me this, they believed it, that Trump was dangerous. And I was like, yeah, but, you know, you can say that, but I would argue that Biden's dangerous because we have an entire war going on and he's shuffling around the White House in his robe and slippers not doing anything about it.
Well, Democrats are telling people that if Trump wins, we'll never have another election in the country again. I mean, that's one of their core messages, which is patently ridiculous.
Right.
All right, Associated Press, NORC, N-O-R-C poll. When it comes to the classified documents found at his Florida home, do you think Trump has done something illegal? Total illegal, 47%. Unethical, 15%. Nothing wrong, 18%.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to his alleged attempt to interfere in Georgia's vote count in 2020, do you think Trump has done something illegal? 47%, unethical, 12%, nothing wrong, 22%.
Interesting. So he's more on the hook for the documents than he is for the election interference.
When it comes to the effort to overturn the results of the 2020 election, do you think Trump has done something illegal? 45%, unethical, 18%, nothing wrong, 22%. So that's the latest Associated Press on the court.
And there's your 22% Trump base.
Yeah. I actually think it's
a little stronger than that.
Well, I mean, there's people saying unethical who might. I could imagine someone answering that saying, oh, it's unethical. But you know, they're all unethical.
Yes, I agree.
And so that I think that would put you pretty squarely in the Trump base.
So, I mean, I look at gas prices. I look at the inflation. I look at interest rates. I look at all the things.
Food prices.
You know, exactly.
18%
inflation. And that's ultimately, we've talked about it before, is that, you know, this is not going to. You can make every argument you want as the president, and that, well, no, the inflation rate is coming down. Well, no, it's all baked in now, and you know it's difficult to live a life as a family.
Yeah, and most people's savings accounts are gone over the last 4 years, having to dip into them to pay for all of these because that their salaries didn't increase with it, and they have no money now.
Speaking of this argument, you're starting to see Democrat Senate candidates make this shrinkflation economic argument that Biden is going to make. We're going to have an ad spotlight today. This is Pennsylvania Senate race. This is the incumbent Democrat, Bob Casey, talking about food prices.
They hope you won't notice. CEOs sneak around, downsize favorite brands, charging more for less. Same packaging, smaller box, familiar logo, fewer servings. I'm Bob Casey. I call it shrinkflation. My plan gives the Federal Trade Commission the power to punish corporate price gouging. And let's roll back their huge tax breaks to put more money where it belongs, in your pocket. That's why I approved this message.
So this is the argument Biden started making in the State of the Union, which, by the way, the example he gave, Snickers, was a total lie. In this ad, Bob Casey's looking at a box of cereal. What they're calling corporate price gouging either A, doesn't exist, or B, are corporations responding to the inflationary pressures under which Joe Biden has put them? And so, I don't know. You guys think it's going to work is the question.
I don't think with the average American, Bob Casey hasn't been to the grocery store probably in 20 years, maybe, because it's absolutely ridiculous. If you go to the grocery store for your family every time, the grocery store prices have increased. The sizes have stayed the same. They've increased because of Biden's strategy and policies.
I think that it's very relatable. I think that the electorate, going back to Trump and kind of reframing what the argument's about in the courtroom, and he can cut through all the confusing stuff. And just talk about, can I go to my son's graduation or not? I mean, should I be? My point being with this is, people recognize this. Yeah, I've seen that. I opened a bag of potato chips the other day, and there were like three in there. And so this is something
that's
which frustrates me.
It's good for you. What you're undercounting is the possibility this is better for your health.
I think that's right. No.
Joe Biden's trying to make us unhealthy.
You open a box of cereal and that there's less cereal in there.
Believe that?
Yeah, I think to your point before, I think that there have been measures taken because of inflationary pressures, and businesses have to do what they have to do. But my point being is, who's responsible for that?
And do you want the government to come along and let's pretend it's all true, which it's not, but let's pretend that it is. Do you want the government to come and mandate the size of your package, the size of your box, the size of whatever you're...
No, absolutely not. And then what's going to happen is, what happens a lot, what's happened to small businesses, is They're just going to fold. They're not going to be able to stay afloat. And these businesses that have been around for forever are just going to end up laying off people. They're going to have shorter workforces, and those people aren't going to have jobs. I mean, it's a domino effect. It's not like they're like, this greedy corporation, we're going to mandate this, and then all of a sudden everyone's going to be happy.
So this is – I'm glad you asked the question, Scott, because even though I do think that there are – now, it's not universal. I mean, certainly there are some packages that you find that are not as – you're not getting as the volume has gone down and the prices stay the same or has gone up for a variety of reasons. But the issue is with all this is – I'm just a free market person and also personal responsibility person. I'm a smart shopper. I look at what the price per ounce is.
Yeah.
And I make decisions based upon, I think a lot of people do that. Gotcha. And but what the difference is in this case, like in Casey in Pennsylvania, is to say you're not smart enough to go shopping on your own. You need the government to step in there and mandate, you know, how this is basically it's like centralized, you know, it's like Soviet like.
I mean, what they're arguing is the government is going to mandate the size of the package, or they're going to fix the prices.
Right.
So they're going to say cereal will never again cost more than $1. I mean, that no one's asking the next question. Well, what next?
What does it mean?
What's next? Yeah. What's the policy? So,
but it's easier just to complain about it.
Yeah.
And say this is terrible. These are greedy people.
I can see why this campaign appeals to you. It's just a sort of a campaign of complaining.
Well, I think I would hope that you would. Friend, that you would see that I might share the frustration, but I don't share the
blame.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in terms of where responsibility lies with these sort of things. And that is the difference. I understand. I mean, I'm not on Facebook often, but when I am, I generally see people complaining about corporations or about bills or about this. And it's just easy just to kind of, they're all crooks. They're all just crooks because I had to pay for this. Well, no. I mean, that's just kind of the way it works in a market economy. You have to pay for things.
You have to pay for things, not everything.
And you have to make but the problem is that inflation. Let's go back to the root cause of all this: is that we have too much money that's flooded the economy.
And Bob Casey in Pennsylvania voted for every bit of it.
Exactly. And so all of a sudden you have this rampant inflation. All of the price increases are locked in. It's not going to come down. You can the rate of the inflation going up might be reduced, but who cares? All I know is that I'm not making my home still costs the same or it costs more, but I don't have a household income to make up for the fact that I can't live. My quality of life basically has gone down.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because of the fact that it just costs more to do everything. What is the root cause of that? Now, what he's doing, of course, is he's attacking a symptom.
Yeah,
and not the cause.
Well, they instead of having a referendum on Joe Biden and Joe Biden's policies, they want to have a referendum on unnamed cereal CEOs or Snickers or whatever. And boy, that would be. I mean, to me, it's a total high wire act. The idea that you would. I mean, most Americans blame Joe Biden, not Trump, for the status of the economy and certainly for inflation. And so the idea that you would be able to run a whole campaign and completely absolve Biden of any responsibility. I mean, the other day, the campaign put out a statement, I'll paraphrase, well, we have had inflation, but if you elect Trump, it'll be so much worse than it is now. I mean, essentially, we're going to give you some inflation. He's going to probably give you more. I mean, they don't have a great answer.
But if you could just muddy the waters long enough for the campaign.
I don't know, man. I just think when you go into the store, it's something people got to do every week between now and Election Day.
Have you changed your shopping habits at all? Are you looking at more stores? Are you being more selective about where you're buying what stuff? Or do you go to the same store every time?
No, I'm more I go to the same stores, but I'm more selective. And I have three kids that are growing quickly. And you have four boys, Scott. And
they eat.
They eat a lot. They eat a lot of food. So, and we go our grocery bills have.
Yeah. We've broadened ours. We've looked at more places, and we are more aware now of where to get the deal on what commodity, depending upon what store it is.
But not everybody. I mean, if you're an average American and you go to the store and you know you have $101 in your bank account right now and you don't get paid for two weeks, you're going to have to be watching that lady, or guy, ringing up your groceries, and you might have to put some things back.
That usually,
that's a very real thing happening to Americans.
I did, last point, Scott, I did send a blistering letter to the store the other day.
Of course you did.
About, because the person who was ringing me up was just incompetent.
I'm sorry.
Could not find the UPC code.
You literally sent a letter to a store?
Like a written
letter? Wait, was it a letter or an email?
No. My point being is...
Wait, did you write it? Did you type it?
The person's
did you
name,
have to put a stamp on it?
The person's name who was incompetent at this at the checkout, was his name was Joe Arnold. Because I don't know, I get very confused. No, I didn't send a letter.
Now, when you cut the individual letters, which magazine did you cut them out of when you pasted them on the...
For Courtney Yop Norris and Scott Jennings, I'm Joe Arnold. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this week's edition of Flyover Country with Scott Jennings.
Flyover Country with Scott Jennings is a production of Bluegrass Media Lab, coming to you from the heart of Middle America, Louisville, Kentucky. If you like what you heard, subscribe to Flyover Country on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcast.